We were there at the dawn of the third age of mankind, in the Earth year 2257, deep in neutral space. We were there when the last of the Babylon stations was founded. The name of the pod is Babylon 5.
Infection, in which an ethically challenged archaeologist accidentally unleashes a living weapon on the station. We get to know Dr. Franklin a little better, and a reporter hounds the reluctant Commander Sinclair for an interview.
Welcome to The Name of the Pod. My name is John Cassie. I am one of your co-hosts, and I'm joined today, as always, by...
your other co-host, Chris Tatro.
Hello, Chris.
Hello, John.
How's it going?
We've got a real... It was going better before I watched Infection.
It was going better before we had to watch Infection. The episode of the day is the season one episode, Infection. And I feel like my time was infected in some real way by having to slog through this. On this episode of The Name of the Pod, as we always do, we're going to talk about a number of different topics related to this episode. We're going to start by talking about Dr. Franklin. Welcome, Dr. Franklin, to the Babylon 5 universe. We're going to talk about why this – hello! We're going to talk about why this episode does not work. We're going to talk a little bit about journalism and in particular, that journalism character, the journalist character. And then we're going to talk a little bit more about something that I think actually brings merit to this episode, namely the concept of dead worlds. What makes a world kind of dead in Babylon 5? What is going on in the rim? That sort of thing. So, Chris, Dr. Franklin, to me, this is kind of emblematic. This character is kind of emblematic of the of sort of what you get when you pull your actors out of soap operas.
Yeah. I think in a lot of ways, this you can see in his staging and his delivery. There's a very soap operatic or stage like blocking, especially when he's there with his his old buddy Vance, played by the eternal David McCallum.
The eternal David McCallum.
Sure, why not? Yeah, right. Our character actor of the episode.
That's right.
Swing into character actor corner. Early on here.
Right.
Best known from Man from U.N.C.L.E. and Sapphire and Steel. He was also in The $6 Million Man, The Great Escape, VR5, pretty much everything. But
he's classic.
Yep.
Character actor doing one of these classic character actor roles.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
He's one of these sort of people that when Mary Jo Slater grabs her Rolodex to do the casting, he's in there and he's going to come up, in any kind of show that anybody's gathering these character actors. But anyway, I digress. But yeah, the interaction between the two of them, I thought, even though McCallum, I think he's a good actor. He's certainly well experienced, but they certainly didn't play off of each other well. It seemed to even amplify the stiffness.
Yeah. Zero chemistry. Right. And, David McCallum is a very accomplished, he's a very accomplished actor, very capable. Mm-hmm. You can't make material that is deader than even, these dead worlds. You can't bring it to life. You can't do anything with it. Now, you and I were talking before we started recording that we noted that J. Michael Straczynski wrote this episode very early in his writing process. And this was the very first episode of Babylon 5 that was actually filmed. And I think that even if we hadn't been told that, we would have suspected that it was very early days because it doesn't really hold together. The humor doesn't really hold. The acting... the other characters, it just doesn't come together in any kind of meaningful way. Why this one I have no idea.
Yeah, none of them have found their spot of comfort yet in the characters. They haven't come to really inhabit them. Even as for all the faults of Soul Hunter, I think that it's a better episode. They were definitely more. Had more sense of who these people were than they did here. So this was
right.
And I I want to say this is the nadir of the season, but I'm looking ahead and I know that TKO is coming.
Yeah.
So we're
No, but it's going to get worse.
Yeah, but this is
And
this
then
is
it's going to get much better.
It absolutely will and it'll get all better very soon. Yeah. But yeah, Dr. Franklin, there's an attempt in here, the only element of his personality that really comes forward is that he's kind of a jerk.
Right. And naive.
Especially Yeah. Yeah. You know, the jerk part I was thinking about when they're examining at the crime scene and he says to Garibaldi, well, what medical school did you attend?
Right.
You know, so it's like, all right, so you're now going to focus an episode on this character who you're setting up in the first act to be really unlikable.
Correct.
And not winning any points there. And then, yeah, he continues to just sort of spout off these sort of platitudes about, you know, you're taking shortcuts and it should really be all about the, you know, the science and the exploration, yeah,
right,
as opposed to looting these dead worlds for whatever, you know, corporate cash can be brought out.
Right. And that's a huge part of this episode that doesn't work for me. If you're going to introduce this kind of corporation concept, mm-hmm, look, anyone watching this program has watched Alien, you know, and has watched, you know, programs that Blade Runner, right, that are going to speak about, you know, the kind of, the 22nd or the 21st century corporate takeover of all of society. And of all people, J. Michael Straczynski, who loves exposition, doesn't give us anything. Right? What kind of corporation?
Yeah.
Are there many corporations? Are they funded only by Earth? Mm-hmm. What's their goal? I mean, is it just let's go out to the rim and find dead places that we can take weird crap from? I mean, how do you make money doing that? Right? You know, if you're going to send an expedition out, just look at sort of, you know, Ferdinand and Isabella and Columbus. If you're going to send an expedition to nowhere,
mm-hmm,
you have to have some confidence that you're going to make some money if you're a corporation, right?
I think that the motivation is that they know that there are things out there, but they don't know necessarily what is out there, is my understanding. You know, they bring this item in the episode back because thinking that it can be sold off as a bioweapon, you know, or at least to research. Earth is the only – well, not only, I guess, the Centauri and the Narn don't, but – Earth doesn't have biotech weaponry like the Mimbari and the Vorlon have.
Right.
And that's
never could
that's
get it right.
Right, right. So this would be a big step forward. And you know, they know that there's cool stuff out there. The whole idea of the jump gates, that there are these – they found these jump gates that have been built by a long dead civilization.
Right.
No idea what's going on. Okay, well, they could do those kinds of cool things. There must be other cool stuff out there to find. So that seems to be the motivation of why we've got these archaeologists, these planetary explorers. I think that Carolyn, was that her name? The captain's girlfriend from the gathering was in the
Catherine.
Same sort of business. No, this one.
Right?
This one's Catherine. This is two.
The captain's woman.
She's in the same sort of business, so it seems that it's a pretty lucrative thing. Of course, in a space opera, it's going to be because, you know, space Indiana Jones is an exciting kind of thing to have.
Right, and if you're going to have space rogues, this is what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right, they're going to go out to the rim and they're going to steal other people's stuff. Steal. I mean,
well, they're going to
you know
grave
what I
rob.
Mean.
Yeah. And can I just we're kind of drifting into a couple of our other topics here of dead worlds. And
you can only
why
talk about Stephen
work.
Franklin for so long.
Yeah.
Right. I think we've hit the point. Dial it back 50% and you're still going to be overacting 50%. But at least we can, you know, kind of move through it without without feeling like, oh my God, he's going to come out of the television like we're in Ringu and he's going to start chewing on me like I'm part of the scenery.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Good grief.
Right, right. Yeah, so we'll close the book on Dr. Franklin for now.
Yes.
And tuck
He'll
it away
be back.
On the shelf somewhere. He'll be back.
He'll be back.
Yeah. But the idea of the corporate interests hiring people to go out to the rim, take stuff,
right?
You know, exercise poor morality. Gee, that, you know, as you say, that's we've seen corporations in science fiction, but this whole, you know, oh, I'm just going to loot old civilizations for money, and that never goes badly.
Right, right. Yeah, always works.
Is there no tradition of fiction where this just blows up every single time in the Babylon 5 universe?
Right.
I mean, you know, in my notes as I was watching this, I say this is pretty much every Doctor Who serial from 1963 through now.
You know, inclusive.
Inclusive, yeah. You would have, right, you know, three episodes of John Pertwee running down corridors and getting just too late for this bioweapon guy has just killed someone. And then you get the final, you know, standoff in the hangar where it's resolved with words and ideas as opposed to shooting. This is a classic Doctor Who plot.
Right. Yeah. And
putting morality above the interest above life. And I mean, putting money over the interests of life, and it always ends badly.
Right. No great surprise.
No.
And so from the writing perspective, you know, J. Michael Straczynski's watched some sci-fi television. Mm-hmm. It's like you want a different kind of angle, you know, refract this through a different kind of lens.
Yeah.
Give us a different approach. Now, maybe we're going to come back to this in season two when we get out to the rim, you know, a lot more. But I think that if we're going to be given this so early in the series, we're actually owed some exposition that we don't get.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're owed. I think that we'd understand a lot more if he'd thought more about what these corporations are doing, what their goals and intentions are. It's back to the problem with the politics, right? Don't the sci-fi television viewing audience, it's an otaku audience. You know, we will take more and more and more and more detail. Mm-hmm. Give us even more. You can't give us too much, right?
I would be careful because what do we the scene where we have Sinclair and Franklin walking down 5, 6, 8 different hallways and
right.
cuts to the next hallway, and all while they're giving this long detailed backstory about the what is this, Ikaran?
Yeah, Ikara 7.
Yeah, yeah. About the civilization and how they died and how they basically racially cleansed themselves out of existence. There was too much. I mean, that was giving it with a fire hose.
I yield the point to the distinguished gentleman.
Yeah, yeah. But if we knew something about, well, why are there all these dead worlds out at the edge and what's going on out there and there are remnants of ancient civilizations that have left stuff behind, but we don't really get any of that. We just know that, but maybe it's enough just to say, oh, there are tons of worlds out there with dead civilizations.
Right.
And I think that's what we get. Fill in the gaps.
Right. We definitely have a sense that there's a kind of civilized core.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sort of deep in neutral space is different from deep in the deadlands.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, if the Centauri and the Narn are sort of interacting with each other in the way that they do, they can't be that far away from each other.
Right.
Right. And, you know, the Earth and the Minbar Federation, they have to all be reasonably close to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that there were kind of galaxy-spanning empires in the past.
Right.
Right. We already kind of have that sense. And the Vorlon, you know, kind of remain enigmatic, but we know that they've that they've been all over, you know, kind of all over the place. So, mm-hmm. So it's not a great surprise that there are these dead worlds, with who knows all kinds of stuff on them, right? And this is a concept that Straczynski's going to be bringing up over and over again. You know, that you've got a kind of civilized core, and then a kind of periphery of death, or of dead, maybe not death, mm-hmm. but you know,
yeah. It seems to be a familiar science fiction television or just science fiction trope, you know, where you've got the even though these four or five main powers are they're spread apart, but they're close enough that they need to be able to interact. But something happened out there a very, very long time ago, and it's you know, that seems to no longer be relevant. You know, Star Wars has the same thing. Firefly has the same right. sort of thing.
Right.
But
I mean, Galactica is predicated on it.
Yeah.
Right. That there's this world so far away that we've lost all contact with it. We don't know where it is, et cetera. You know?
Yeah.
You know, you've got, 10% of the entire canon of Star Trek mm-hmm. is we have encountered the Iconians, the Takan Empire, blah, blah, blah. Right. Mm-hmm. And they've been dead for 60,000 years or a million years or whatever, and we're going to interact with them by means of their technology or by means of their, you know, what they've left, you know, their cultural remnants, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a theme in sci-fi TV, and we needed it introduced. I just think it might have been introduced in a different way, in a much more sophisticated way. Mm-hmm. You know, we've already got kind of a sense of the Psi-Corps as a kind of sinister parallel operation to the Earth government. It wouldn't have been that hard to create an equally sinister, if what it's meant to be, right? Yeah. Parallel about corporations and you know, the way that they control the politics or the way that they are influenced by the Psi-Corps or, you know, or whatever, right? You know, I mean...
Yeah. Yeah, you know, name your corporation. Make it an entity.
Exactly.
That this guy's working for, as opposed to just corporations in general, which when you start running around saying, oh, all the corporations are out to kill us, then you kind of start sounding a little like a nutter.
But, right. Because we know that's just not how these things would work. But there could definitely be mega corporations that are acting in their interest first.
Mm-hmm.
Might have been a productive kind of through line for mm-hmm. him to introduce, you know, that he didn't, particularly in an episode that kind of needs some help story wise.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the concept of dead worlds, the concept of the rim, mm-hmm. right, where we just don't know what's going on, that was established in the first – it was established in the pilot, right? You talk about Laurel Takashima's famous line about, you know, the peace-loving Narn we've all come to know and love except for a few planets out on the rim who say that you've attacked them.
Yeah.
Well, the line doesn't work because people don't talk that way. We already had this conversation. But in particular, the line felt weird to me because how would you not know the Narn either did or did not attack this planet? But you can imagine this concept of the rim being so, so difficult to get information back from that it's like colonial Brazil, right? You can get information back, but it's going to take 3 years, and who knows what you're going to actually get back. So if it's that, cool. If it's not, then mm-hmm. then that leaves me kind of scratching my head.
Yeah, unless you have a more widespread use of these gold channel communications, which seem to have magical instantaneous transport over huge distances of space.
Right.
Once you start getting further and further out, I would have to imagine you have the same problem with any of the, you know, pre-telephone, telegraph technology expansions where yeah, it's word can only get back as fast as light can move, or a ship can travel, or
right.
or whatnot. So you're going to have a lot of things going on out in the edges where you just don't really know it. And maybe as if worlds are more and more sparse, there's less and less traffic to be an independent observer. Yeah, sure. Then, you know, if all of a sudden the Narn are occupying this world, well, the Narn could say they invited us in. Look, we're just hanging out. You know, they wanted some help, and we're here to rebuild their infrastructure. So it does come down to a question of you know, who do you believe in those kind of cases when there are no third party observers to be able to say what was really going on there.
Right.
I think. I wonder, you know, and I'm no astrophysicist. I don't know the layout of the galaxy, but I know that we're in, you know, one little arm of the Milky Way here. And, you know, I don't get the sense that it's more dense around Earth in this part of space than it is elsewhere. So the idea of an outer rim kind of rings false to me.
Yeah.
In a couple of ways. And, you know, wondering, well, why is everything that's out there, why did all those fail and die? And why are all these, quote-unquote, newer civilizations, if you can call them Ibari, Vorlon's Moon, why are they all gathered over here? What's, you know, what's going on? That raises my curiosity.
Right.
But I also wonder if it's not, you know, not as realistic as one might expect from a more hard science sci-fi show like this.
Yeah.
I mean, Harlan Ellison's on board as conceptual yeah, right, consultant right. here. He's going to be earning his paycheck somehow.
Yeah.
If we're thinking
he didn't
this
read
up,
this episode.
Yeah. Then they must have had that conversation at some point.
Yeah. Probably after they made this episode.
Yeah. You know, oops.
Yeah.
Well, I know from reading the notes online on that great site, The Lurker's Guide to Babylon 5, that we've been
it's a great
at.
Site.
It is. JMS was not pleased with this one, and he thinks that it's one of the low points of the series. So I think we're in agreement there.
Yeah, we agree with him.
Mm-hmm.
A very quick couple of minutes on this journalist.
Yeah.
What is the deal? Why is this character written that way? Right? It's not like
super
she's
aggressive.
From Foreign Policy magazine. Right? I mean, she's... Mm. She's essentially writing a fluff piece. She should have come off as, you know, as a features reporter.
Yeah, yeah. If she'd been trying to chase down specific information on some, you know, wrongdoing or something, you know, trying to find Commander Sinclair's charitable giving record over the past 20 years,
right,
keeping
right.
receipts and all of this, you know, great. That's one reason to be this in your face, but really when she does sit down with him at the end, it's, as you say, it's a fluff piece. It's about why should we be in space?
Right. It's, this is an episode that badly needed, a different kind of tone to balance what was going on with Franklin and et al.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't get it. Instead, we got more of that.
Yeah.
You know, so you want to ask the director, you know, was this really the right approach to this character?
Yeah.
Clearly I don't think it was. So.
Yeah, it just seemed unnecessary. And maybe it's a setup. From looking at IMDb, I see that she does come back later in the season.
Yeah.
So maybe this is more setup for her than something else, but yeah, she's not. Yeah, she's too aggressive. You know, she storms onto the bridge or the dome, I guess it is. You know, which should be a secure area. I don't think the
right.
civilians
Central
should be
Command,
able to march in
right.
there. Yeah, yeah. Let's take Garibaldi out behind the shed and give him a good spanking.
That's right.
Why is she so doggedly pursuing him? And Sinclair's reasons for not wanting to give the interview that Leo last time he shot his mouth off and it didn't go well and he ended up getting assigned to an outpost, you know, out in the outer rim.
Right.
Well, that doesn't sound like the Sinclair that we've seen for all of these episodes so far.
Right. Too flippant.
Yeah. You know, he seems so controlled. He wouldn't just you know, shoot his mouth off and say something that's going to get him in that level of political trouble.
Right. Yeah, you can almost imagine, given that Sinclair and Garibaldi go back a ways, that line should have gone more like this. Garibaldi says, you know, what about this journalist? And Sinclair says, Michael, you know about me and journalists. And then Garibaldi says, yeah, I needed a Ouija board to find you after that last interview.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Give that flippant line to Garibaldi, because that's a Garibaldi trait.
Yeah.
Right.
But, right. Yeah, that it didn't sound right coming out of Sinclair's mouth.
Right.
Maybe this was trying to lighten the character a little bit. And as you said, this was early on. This is one of the first ones written. So we don't necessarily have his voice nailed down completely yet either. But the whole interaction with Marianne Kramer, the reporter, you know, did not sit well. Just felt out of place.
And you know what this is kind of reminding me of. I want to get a better sense of the institutions of each of these planets.
Mm-hmm.
And in a well-established program, you get a sense of what, for instance, Starfleet is,
mm-hmm.
the Federation Council, the president of the colonial planets, the Admiralty,
mm-hmm.
The relationship between Earth and Mars in the Expanse, the nature of the Alliance in Firefly, on and on. Where this program is continuing to frustrate me is in its it takes the opportunity to introduce an institution like a corporation or a government or journalism, and it paints it in one sentence, or it paints it with an inappropriate character, and then you're left wondering, well, what am I to make of this?
Mm.
Right. You're trying to build this huge picture of a civilization, and we don't get enough of it in the institutions that you've given us. Now, we're going to get a lot more of that in the next episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Good stuff.
And it's not like you don't get exposition about stuff. As I said, you know, we get five pages of dialogue on this, you know, throwaway dead empire.
Right.
Maybe spend some of that time talking to us about how the or showing us, better than talking to us about, how the media back on Earth is really operating. We've seen a bunch of examples of it before. We've seen the Universe Today newspaper.
Sure.
We've seen the news reports of the presidential election, but nothing's really tying it together to give us an idea of how is the media acting in what year are we in here? This is 2258. Yes. So, and in some ways it maybe is for the best, because I mean, if in 1994, who could have really predicted that news media would look like it does today in 2017?
Correct.
It certainly has spun wildly in that short amount of time. Who knows what it's going to do in the next, you know, 240 years.
Right.
So.
I think we're near the end of this episode. What do you think?
I think this horse is well dead and beaten.
agree.
We could just mention, you know, that we get a couple throwaway lines about the anti-alien political sentiment, and that the powers are really rising back on Earth, and that's definitely something that's going to be building up in future episodes.
Yes.
You know, I think this episode failed really because it tried to do too much all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It was being too aggressive, trying to make the points about the, you know, the ethics of raiding these dead worlds, about this whole purity and genocide concept that runs throughout it, trying to have this B plot that never really goes anywhere, but has the nice wrap at the end with, when we actually get the interview. It's like, oh, that's, you know, that's kind of a good sentiment. I like having it in there, but right. It's all just jammed in to a bag and shaken up without any kind of right. moderation of how much of each of the pieces we're getting. And it's places that other shows I think had before this had trod more successfully.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
we agree.
So all that's left to do then is to identify our Straczynskiest line.
Go.
Well, this one's like shooting fish in a barrel.
Right.
There were a lot of them, and I could go, you know, I've so far always gone for the bad lines, but,
right.
And there's plenty of those, but I just mentioned the speech at the end during the interview, and I'm looking through my notes here, trying to find it. Here we go. Where Sinclair is, you know, asked, is it worth it being out here in space? And he says, you know,
right.
that there's one thing every scientist on the planet agrees on, and whether it happens in 100 years or 1,000 years or 1,000,000 years, eventually our sun will go cold and go out. And he lists off all, you know, accomplishments or people. And
yes.
he says, you know, unless we go out into space, it's all gone. All of this was for nothing unless we go to the stars. And that's, you know, that as we are here in 2017, staring down an ecological disaster, while at the same time cutting funding for NASA,
right?
It's ringing true a lot more than it was in 1994. I think
totally
worried about the ozone layer and holes over Antarctica and whatnot. Then,
indeed, we were.
Yeah,
and
aerosol
the fact
cans.
that and the fact that we're not worrying about those things to the same degree now will be a subject for our environmental studies podcast, which we will get onto onto generating straight away. Yeah, I totally agree with your choice of dialogue there. It's the classic. 5 people from ancient history that you definitely know about, and then one name of some random person from the 22nd century that you haven't yet heard of.
Yeah,
kind of shtick. They all do that. It's all fun.
But I'm glad they did, because there are some shows that focus too much on, you know, sort of love and adoration of the time period that the show was being made in, or that the movie or the book was being made in. And yes, you know, I'm looking squarely at you, Ready Player One, where you exalt one certain time period and, you know, nothing of value happened after that time. And so to have these occasional throw-ins of a name of somebody who has yet to come, is good. You know, I'm still bothered by Garibaldi, you know, and his love for Bugs Bunny.
Correct.
You know, it's good stuff, but honestly, nobody born today watches Bugs Bunny. Why would somebody born, you know, 200 years from now watch Bugs Bunny?
Right.
We're going to get letters about from Bugs Bunny fans.
Absolutely.
My wife probably the first one of them.
Right.
So, but yeah, I like that that whenever they go over a list like that, that seems to be something that Straczynski throws in.
Are you trying to make the argument that there were valid D&D modules after the Slave Pits of the Undercity? I just want to make sure that I understand you here.
Well, you know, Slave Pits of the Undercity itself is fine, and then we're going to have to go into this more on our AD&D podcast that we have.
Right.
But I would say that after, you know, we don't get Dragonlance until after Slave Pits the Undercity. And
Dragonlance, and Dragon Schmance.
That's the pinnacle of civilization.
Oh, my
as far
God.
As, I'm being wordlessly sarcastic as I say this.
I have known you for so long, and I've heard you talk so much nonsense and drivel. And yet here we are in 2017 with you reaching the absolute height of your nonsenseness.
I am the person who thinks that Dune Messiah is the
Dune
best
Messiah.
Dune novel.
God
yes.
bless.
So, yeah,
we'll talk about that on our Dune podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we've somehow managed to milk 30-odd minutes out of what I thought was going to be a 2-minute conversation about a
indeed
pointless episode. So hopefully 30 odd better minutes than the episode itself.
Right. We hope that that you got something out of it, and that that you'll share with us your thoughts on Dr. Franklin and the sort of the idea of the Rim, and you know, kind of space archaeology and space rogues, and don't talk to us about the journalist, because we're done with that.
Yeah, very much. Yeah.
Next,
You can find us on Facebook. We have a Facebook page. You can comment and whatnot there. You can. The podcast is on iTunes and in other sorts of podcast places. Give us comments and reviews and ratings on there, please. Email us at thenameofthepod@gmail.com, and we'd love to hear from you.
In 2 weeks' time, the Parliament of Dreams. Until then, folks, see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.